to the taste of alcohol. I just want to drink it. To drink it at all costs. But they will become desensitized to everything else.
They will become desensitized to the cost that the money that they are spending, to the inconvenience that they are causing to others, to the family members. They may suffer because they're spending so much money on alcohol, they're spending so much money on alcohol. They will lose desensitization. In Russia, and vodka became a big addiction. There was a vodka awareness generation ad that was made. So, said that the price of vodka had gone up. And so then, as son, a child in the family, he asked his father, now that the vodka price has gone up, Papa, are you going to drink less? The father said, no, you are going to eat less. You are going to eat less. So, food is a basic necessity. It's a natural parental emotion to provide for one's children. But when one becomes desensitized, then one's emotions are so riveted to the alcohol that the starvation that one's own child is facing, one doesn't realize it. Now, normally, if someone is an alcoholic, then that is because it's actually a degraded person. How can it be so alcoholic? What is this? But the alcoholism is something which you can see as directly bad. But there can be similar intoxication because of ego. And that intoxication because of ego was what happened to Lakshmi. So his daughter was starving for a little affection. She was not asking for much. All that happened was she came to his house, which is her house, that is where she had grown up. And there's a big festivity there. And she came, and all that she asked for was attention. But he completely did it. The human body can starve, it starves because of lack of food. But the human heart starves because of lack of affection. The heart can starve. And actually, when the heart is starved of affection, that can cause unbearable distress. So the nature of the ego, in this case, he was so ego-conscious, his consciousness was simply tuned to the ego. That Shiva does not respect me. Shiva did not respect me. And therefore, anybody connected with Shiva, I will not care for. So this is how our attachments can make us super sensitive about small slights in certain situations, then they can just completely desensitize to other things. But when this selectivity of our capacity to experience emotions, this can have terrible consequences. Sometimes we feel that if you become detached, we become uncaring, we become hard-hearted, and we will not be responsible. Yes, that it can happen if somebody doesn't understand detachment properly. Detachment can make one hard-hearted, but attachment can also make one hard-hearted. Attachment makes us super sensitive, super soft-hearted about the object of attachment. But it makes us desensitized to everything else. That is, doesn't care for the emotions of those one is not attached, or one who doesn't matter to oneself. But that is illustrated right at the start of the Bhagavad Gita. In the first verse, Dhritarashtra asks, Dhritarashtra vacha dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samveta yutsala mahara pandava shiva kimakurvata sanjaya. So he says, mamaka pandava shiva. What did my sons and the pandavas do? Now he was a father figure in the family. Sometimes there are always among equals, there are always some squabbles. That is natural. Siblings may fight each other, friends may quarrel with each other. Now, when there are squabbles among equals, those who are elders, they need to mediate and they need to resolve it. But if the squabble that happened among
younger people, if the elders take side. And not only take side, they completely lose the other side. And that is a terrible dereliction of duty. So Dhritarashtra, yes, it could, we could say that he had natural affection towards his own children. That's fine. But the Pandavas were not some aliens. They are also related to him. They are his nephews. And normally, if there is a joint family or there is a traditional family setting, then the extended family also brings with it an extended sense of connectivity and responsibility. Now, if a greater family is there, something goes wrong with somebody will come and support him. So with respect to Pandavas, they did not have a father. So the Dhritarashtra was meant to be like a father figure for them. And the Pandavas actually treated Dhritarashtra like a father. Yudhishthira respected Dhritarashtra as like a father. But Dhritarashtra never reciprocated. Although he took the respect that they offered to him as a father, but he never did, and he never showed them affection. He never did the responsibility expected of a father. So here what has happened? Throughout, before the Mahabharata, he was so sensitive to the smallest pain of Duryodhana. Duryodhana, when he came back from the Rajasuya Yajna, he was burning with envy. He said that Dhritarashtra, actually Shakuni and Duryodhana both manipulated Dhritarashtra. Shakuni said, came to the and said, "Oh king, your son who is more dear to you than your life is so distressed that he may give up his life. What happened? What's wrong with him?" And Duryodhana was just moaning and fuming. And Dhritarashtra said, "Oh Duryodhana, what are you lacking? You have magnificent talents. You have servants. You have royal born. You have power. What are you lacking?" And Duryodhana's answer was, "What man can be happy when he sees his rival doing better than him?" So, most of the anarthas, lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, we call them negative because they make us do sinful activities or they blind us to our spiritual interest. But from a practical perspective, even if somebody doesn't accept the importance of spiritual life, still, or somebody doesn't accept the concept of karma and accountability for one's actions. Still, what these anarthas do is lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, and illusion. They put our source of pleasure outside us. And therefore, they make us dependent on things that are not happening. And somebody is controlled by lust. Then they depend on something outside of them for pleasure. When somebody is angry at that time, they want something outside to control by which they get some pleasure. And among all the other, envy is the worst. When envy comes up, what happens? One cannot delight in oneself getting things. One has to make sure that one gets things better than others. Or the others get things worse than you. The traditional story in India, and the similar stories, I told a story in America, and they told me a similar story there. There were two neighbors who were praying to God, and both of them were fervently praying. So God came to them, and at the first neighbor, said, "What do you want?" He says, he was about to ask, and God said, "See, you and your neighbor, both of you are praying. So, I'll give you whatever you want, but one condition." "Whatever I give you, I'll give your neighbor double." He thought about it. "Make me blind in one eye." "Make me blind in one eye." So, my neighbor become blind in both eyes. So, this is the tragic. So, Duryodhana was so envious that he said, "What man can be happy when his rival is doing better than him?" And then Dhritarashtra tried to pacify him. "Be satisfied with what you have. There's no way you can be satisfied." Then Shakuni had Shakuni and Duryodhana presented the plan. We'll invite them from Gandhi and we will have them. We will have them disposes them of all their wealth. And now this is an insidious plan. Dhritarashtra agreed to that. So what happened was, he was so sensitive to the small pain that he was going through that he was ready to cause the Pandavas enormous amount of pain. So this is the nature of attachment. Attachment, what it does is, it makes us super sensitive to the emotion of one person we attach to, and makes us desensitized to the emotions of others. Or it takes our consciousness just along one track, and what is happening on the other tracks, we just are no longer aware of. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the word kamatmanaha. He says in 2.42-43, he says, Yamam Pishpitam Vachan Pravadandya Vipashita Vedavadata Vata Nanya Asti Vadina Kamat Mana Swarvara Janma Karma Phala Pradam Kriya Vishesh Bakulam Bhogeshwarya Tinpati. So in 2.42-43 is talking about the people who want to attain heavens. And he says, Kam Atma. So the word Atma refers to soul. But we also use the word Atma in a metaphorical sense. You put your heart and soul in the service. That doesn't mean you take out the soul from the heart and put it in the service. It just means invest your consciousness, invest your emotions. So the word consciousness, this word soul is used to refer to the driving spirit, the core, the heart, the very essence of a thing. So for example, you may say that in cricket, they say the sporting spirit is the soul of cricket. If you don't play sportingly, then it is not a gentleman's sport. So now, whether it is a gentleman's sport or not, that's a different question. But the point is, there is something to the driving spirit, something to the essence, something to the core, that is also referred to as the soul. So here, Krishna uses the word kamatmana. That means he's saying that kama becomes the atma of the person. Means that their worldly desires, whatever desire they have, the kama, that becomes a driving force of the person. So, in physics, they have the concept of center of mass and the center of gravity. Center of mass is the point where if the object is there, where the object's mass is concentrated, or what is the central point of that? But center of gravity is where the force of gravity acts and the central point of that. Now, normally the two will coincide, but depending on the shape of the object, depending on the nature of the gravitational field, the center of gravity and the center of mass may vary. So, similarly for us as souls, the center of our being is the Atma, is the soul in the sense of a part of Krishna, the spark of spirit that is there in us. But depending on our attachments are like the force of gravity. They pull us down. They pull us down towards the object of attachment. So depending on what our particular attachment is, our center of gravity varies from the center of us. That means, although at my core I am a soul, but based on what I am attached to, how much I am attached to, my driving desires will not be based on my soul. They will be based on what is presently my driving spirit. That becomes, functionally speaking, my soul. So, this of course we are using in a non-literal sense. But the point I am making over here is that akama mana, Krishna using a non-literal sense to refer to how kama, the desire of kama, can be the driving desire of something. That's why three verses later after this, Krishna says that Nirvandho Nityasattvastho Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavan. So normally we hear the word Bhagavan. That means the possessor of opulences. Dhanavan is the possessor of wealth. Gyanavan is the possessor of knowledge. Now what is Atmavan? If I am the soul, what does it mean to be the possessor of the soul? That means, like in the Bible, what profit is a man if he gains the whole world, but if he loses his eternal soul? So here, losing the soul doesn't mean that the soul is something which falls out of the body and you lose it. Losing the soul means losing spiritual awareness. Losing the opportunity for spiritual awareness. And getting lost completely in materialistic consciousness. So when Krishna is saying, when one becomes detached from worldly things, detached from ungodly worldly things, and then one works with that detachment, then one can become Atmavan. That means one can become the possessor of one's soul. That is, one can become the possessor of spiritual awareness. To become Atmavan means our center of gravity coincides with the center of mass. That means our driving desires harmonize with our defining identity. Who I am and what I desire, they come in harmony. Now, some amount of disharmony is inevitable in our material existence. But the extent of disharmony varies depending on the magnitude of the attachment and the nature of the attachment. So, the attachment is sattva-guna, rajoguna, or tamoguna. And how attachments? So, some many people drink, but even when they drink, they may drink in moderation. So, if some people go for a party or they want to drink, then when they are driving back, you make a plan. No, you should not drink in the party. So you will be driving us back. So even while drinking, they have that level of sobriety. I mean, they understand that I cannot drive while I'm drinking. So now, but some people may just get so drunk that they just can't think about anything. They just get dead. So attachments also have degrees. Now, the point I was making earlier is there are certain attachments which are easily seen as attachments as bad. Somebody gets into alcohol, somebody gets into drugs, they become addicted, it's bad. But there is an attachment which comes from the ego, which masks itself as the need for respectability. That means, I think I'm simply doing this because I want to be respected. But in the name of being respected, in the name of seeking respect, one may also become completely intoxicated and blinded. So, just like in today's world, there is a form of addiction, like we have alcoholism, there is workaholism. Now, workaholism is called by psychologists as the prestigious addiction. Why? Because in today's work-centered culture, if a person works for a lot of time, this person works for 10 hours, 12 hours, 15 hours, you work so hard. People get a sense of prestige out of working so hard. And now, yes, we need to work to live. And we may have some ambitions, we fulfill those ambitions. But if work becomes practically the whole thing, our work defines our life. Then we are working so that we can avoid dealing with the issues in life. You know, at my home I have a spouse, I don't get along with the spouse, I have kids, I don't know how to take care of them. So I just give the excuse of work and work constantly and just throw some money at them. But then what is happening? We are working, but the working is becoming an escape. But whereas somebody drinks and then that becomes an escape way, that can be seen as that. But when somebody becomes a workaholic and then seeks that as an escape way, that is a prestigious addiction. You get awards for working so hard. You get infatuated by that. And when that happens, then the addiction gives more and more prestige, and many times the consequence is not so visible easily. Alcoholism consequences is quite visible. Alcoholism is not so visible. In the word consequence, I use a negative. I imply negative consequences. So when it is not visible,
then we just get more and more consumed by it.
So, the same happens with ego. A certain level of respect is what we all actually expect. So, work is something which we all have to do. So, in that sense, you could say work and respect are different from something like alcohol or drugs. Nobody is going to try without alcohol or drugs. They can do very well without it. But we have to work to live. And in our normal dealings, we do expect respect. And if we don't get some respect, we'll actually feel hurt by it.
It's fine. But when that which is normal becomes disproportionate.
So, our body has various parts. And normal bodily growth means that all the parts grow proportionally. But when there is cancer, now normally speaking, cancer cells are not like some malevolent foreign organism that is coming to the world. It's not some germs that have come in, it's not some bacteria that have come in. It's our own body cells, one part of the body starts growing disproportionately. And when it starts growing disproportionately, that growth becomes so disproportionate that it becomes destructive for the soul. So, the addiction like say alcoholism or drugs, they are like foreign bodies coming out. Then you get, oh, this is not necessary, I'll get out completely. But with respect to cancer, it's a part of our body which suddenly starts growing so much that it grows disproportionately and destructively. Similarly, there's a normal human need to work, there's a normal human need to have some amount of respect. But when that becomes obsessive, that becomes disproportionate, then that destroys everything else. This is what has happened to Daksha over here. That his need for prestige, his need for honor became so compulsive, so obsessive, that he just forgot everything else. That it was almost as if he acted soullessly. He acted heartlessly. Because his own daughter, he completely neglected her. He neglected her to such an extent that she ended her life. And worst of it, you see later, that Daksha does not express any regret that his daughter has killed herself. Now everyone else laments, but he doesn't lament. There is no description of he lament. So this is, now, in most traditional cultures, honor, I conclude with this point, this is an important point to understand, that there is honor, there is ego, or you could say there is pride or arrogance, whatever word you want to use. The two are not necessarily the same. Most traditional cultures were very honor centered. You have to act in a way that protects the good name of your family. You should not do anything to spoil the good name. So, now honor is itself not a bad thing. In fact, in the Bhagavatam 4th canto, there is a verse where Dhruva's determination is appreciated by another woman. When Dhruva leaves home and goes to the forest. And it's a very striking verse which says, Aho Kshatriya Tejasam Mana Bhangam Amrushyam. So just see the glory of the Kshatriyas that they cannot tolerate dishonor. You may say, is this a glory? So he is appreciating that Dhruva is just a small boy, he is just a 5-year-old boy, but he cannot tolerate this one. And that's why he left his home, he has gone to the forest, and now he is ready to search for God. But Narada Muni speaks this in a positive way, not angry. And just see how great are the Kshatriyas, but they cannot tolerate this one. Now what is going on over here? Actually, honor in the traditional culture was used as a very powerful force to make people behave honorably. The sense of honor was used to make people behave honorably. There's a letter of Srila Prabhupada where he writes one of his disciples, and his disciple had taken initiation, but then he had broken the regular principles and he had fallen.
So then Prabhupada writes the letter, says, you have taken a vow before the deities, before the sacred fire, and before the Vaishnavas. How could you break the vow? Says, don't you have any sense of honor? Don't you have any sense of honor?
What does it mean? Honor in this context is not prestige, how much the world respects. When we talk about prestige or ego or pride, it is about how much the world respects. But honor is often about how much I respect myself. That means there is a certain way I am to behave. If I give my word, I will stick to that. And so honor is a concept where the natural power of the human ego is channeled to make a person act in honorable way, act respectfully. So yes, you should not be dishonored. You should not do anything which will be dishonored. And therefore, act in honor. Act in a way that brings honor. So this, if we are in a pious society, we all have natural human need to be accepted and respected. And if it is a pious society, it's a virtue society, the way we will earn acceptance and respect is by acting piously, by living respected. So the need for honor can make people behave in honorable ways. And in that sense, if people just don't care what others think about them, I'll come to a little part how this can become excessive, but if we take our word seriously, we take our image seriously, not in the sense that we are putting up a facade, but rather we want to be accepted and respected by living honorably, then honor is a force which can inspire us to live virtuously. So, if you're chanting with devotees and then you can see, what will other devotees think of me? I don't see, wait for a chant. Now, if I'm chanting only so that I look good to other devotees, that's not good. But if that forces me to, okay, wake up and wash my face and chant again, then that is good. If I'm only driven by the consideration of honor and nothing else, then it becomes a problem. But if honor is one more force which impels me to move towards dharma, then that is good. So in that sense, the word honor is often used in a positive sense. But when it becomes arrogance or pride, at that time, when you talk about pride or arrogance, what happens there is that this becomes the compulsive driving need of a person. It means unless people honor me, unless people respect me, unless people show this, I just get too agitated. One thing is, the sense of honor should make me behave honorably. That is positive. But if the sense of honor becomes excessive, then rather than that sense of honor making me behave honorably, the lack of honor makes me act against others disproportionately. You didn't respect me, I will show you who I am, what I am. So this is where the same force which is constructive becomes destructive. And then Narada Muni is appreciating Dhruva. What is the glory of the Kshatriya? They cannot tolerate dishonor. What is happening? Because in that sense of dishonor, Dhruva is ready to leave home at the age of 5 and go out in search of Vishnu. And the result is supremely auspicious. It is supremely glorious. So the sense of honor makes him do something glorious. But the sense of honor is meant to make us act honorably. But the sense of honor, when it is misdirected, it makes us act vindictively towards somebody who has dishonored us. And that is what happens in many societies where the higher purpose is forgotten. Where only the shell or the shell and structure remains, the purpose is lost. That, okay, honor is fine, but what is the purpose of honor? And that is forgotten Then, in the name of honor, people do all kinds of terrible things. As I've been spending more time in the West, I come to know more about Western people's perception of India. So one of the things that you Indians, you indulge in honor killings. Actually, it's an obscure incident that happened in a few places, but they are played out in the Western media. And it happens not just in India, it happened in China, it happened in the Middle East. So what has happened is, the honor was meant for a higher purpose. It was meant to make people behave honorably. But when that sense of that higher purpose is forgotten, in India, the festivals are meant to be centered on Krishna. Diwali is meant to be centered on Lord Ram. But for most people, what is Diwali? Diwali is simply food and noise.
Gambling
also. Eat a lot of food and blow a lot of crackers. There is no remembrance of the Lord. So what has happened is the structure is remained. So similarly, with respect to the honor-centered societies, the structure,
you dare to dishonor me, we which will want to kill you.
And there is vendetta and there are revenge saga that happen because that sense of honor has not only become misdirected, but it has become excessive. So honor is meant to help us act in harmony with our true identity. But if honor becomes our identity, then that honor can make us act disproportionately. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna in 2.13 that you are not the body of the soul. Dehi no smriha, dehi kamaru yuvanji. The soul is unchanging than the changes of the body. Next verse he says, Matra Sarshastu Kaunteya Shito Shusuka Dukkada Agama Paino Nitya Stam Sriksha Suvahrata. So he says, therefore tolerate it. This is temporary, this is superficial, this doesn't affect your soul, tolerate. The significant point is, Krishna is using two forms of address, Partha and Kaunteya. Both are related with the body. Just now he has told you not the body, and now he is saying, O son of Kunti, O descendant of Bharata. Why? The Prabhupada explains that within the purport that belonging to a great dynasty brings responsibility to act. So Krishna is saying, Arjuna, Arjuna, you belong to a Kshatriya dynasty. You belong to a respectable dynasty. You are the son of a glorious woman. Therefore, yes, tolerating is difficult, but you can do it. You have the capacity to do it. You belong to a worthy lineage. You can do it. So here, the sense of identity, the sense of honor coming from one's heritage or one's lineage is used to inspire one to behave honorably. So honor is meant to inspire us to behave in harmony with our identity. But one forgets one's spiritual identity. And the honor becomes the only identity. I belong to this family, and this family is so honorable. You dare to insult me, I will kill you. Then the purpose of that honor is distorted. And that's what happens with the three things that Shiva did not respect me. I will not care for him. I will not care for Shiva. So his emotions of apathy, or not even apathy, aversion towards Shiva became so great that it became also expresses apathy towards his own daughter. And apathy to the level where she killed herself and yet he did not feel anything. So for us also, the process of bhakti is actually the process of sensitization. First of all, we want to become sensitized to Krishna. When we come to temple, if we sense this is Krishna's presence, Krishna is present over here. I will be chanting Krishna. This Krishna present over here. In general, you will become more and more sensitive to Krishna. What will please Krishna? What will displease Krishna? How should I conduct myself? Not just when I am in temple, but in general with everyone. So, as we become sensitized to Krishna, we become sensitized to other living beings also. Because we see Krishna is connected with all living beings. And whereas, normally, we will be sensitized to people simply based on our attachment to them or what they can do for us. As devotees, we become sensitized to others based on how they are connected with Krishna. A simple difference between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness is, in material consciousness, as soon as I see someone, I think, what can this person do for me?
If this person can do something for me, I talk with them. They can't do anything for it. In spiritual consciousness, I think, what can I do for this person? How can I serve this? That doesn't necessarily mean that you will be able to serve everyone. You may also have to think whom I can serve the best. So we always remain limited. And because of our limitedness, we cannot do everything for everyone, or we cannot do everything even for one person. But the basic framework of the relationship changes. So the process of bhakti is actually the process of increasing our sensitization. We increase our sensitization towards Krishna and increase our sensitization towards other living beings in relationship with Krishna. And tomorrow's class I'll talk about, from Sati's perspective, we'll talk about how Daksha became blinded by his attachment. I'll talk tomorrow about how, from Sati's perspective, how she invited trouble for herself by her unrealistic expectation of reciprocation from Daksha. So our frustration comes because of expectation that are not realistic. That I'll talk in tomorrow's class. I'll summarize what I spoke today. I spoke about how Daksha, who is the parent of all living beings, became so desensitized that his own daughter killed her cousin and he didn't care. So I talked about how our attachments, they make us sensitized to certain things. Our consciousness goes along one track and goes deadened to another tracks. You may worry about one batsman gets out of the cricket match thousands of kilometers away. Somebody is dying of starvation outside my house, I don't care. So, Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra is just going to elaborate how Dhritarashtra, because of his attachment to Duryodhana, he couldn't tolerate a little pain that he had. His son was pain. He was ready to cause monstrous pain to his enemies. So, all the anarthas, they place our source of pleasure outside us. And because of that, they make us powerless. The certain attachments, they can be very easily seen to be bad. Like alcoholism. Like a father says, I will drink, I'll keep drinking, but you should be just your son. This is monstrous. Alcoholism or drug addiction, the desensitization they cause can be seen as terrible very easily. But there are certain attachments which can seem as respectable in the studies. Let's say workaholism. There, work is something which is necessary. Just like we all need our body parts. But when one body part starts growing disproportionately, that becomes cancerous. So like that, something which is an important part of our life also, like work, if that becomes our sole focus in our life, then it becomes cancerous. And it can disrupt and destroy that system. I talk about the soul as a definition and soul as our driving force. So we are, as the word soul is used literally to refer to the Atma, it can be used metaphorically also to refer to what is the most important thing for us. So for those who are attached, the Kama Atma, the Kama becomes their soul. So the Atma, in terms of the higher dimension spiritual energy, that is like the center of mass. But our core attachment, which drives us, is like the center of gravity. So Atmana, here is a soullessness. That means there is no heart, no emotion left over there. And Atmavan, possessor of soul, means that by proper spiritual living, the center of gravity and the center of mass become harmonized. One becomes a possessor of spiritual awareness, and one's driving desires harmonize with one's defining identity. So, when, say, sense of honor, respect is an actual human need in daily deeds. And in a traditional society, which is honor centered, the sense of honor is used to inspire people to behave honorably, to honor their own words to others, and to do actions which will not make them lose face. So that way, even if something is difficult, if it is dharmic, then they will do it. So, but when instead of honor making us live in harmony with our identity, if honor becomes our identity, then that honor becomes
the sole focus of one's consciousness, not dharma and acting dharmically, then honor, the sense of honor can become cancerous. And people become vindictive, they get vendetta, and small things which are seen as impinging on one's honor can lead into huge reactions. So Daksha was so honor conscious that he was ready to let his daughter die, and he did not feel any remorse even after she died. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes. So if somebody has become too desensitized to everything because of their attachment, then how do we bring them back to broader sensitization of things? Yes. There are broadly three things. One is that something within their area of sensitization that jolts them out of their stupor. So for example, there's a story of Bilva Mangala Shakula. His father had died, and it was his father's crematorium that was to be there. And he was supposed to be there for the cremation. But that time, he was thinking of Chintamani. He just left. And then what happened? As he came there to Chintamani spoke to him, "What are you doing for here?" That just jolted him. So that means, you know, we have some area of sensitization, and we have a lot which we are desensitized to. So if something within that area of sensitization exists, then because of that being sensitized to that, we understand. That's one way. So if the other is that sometimes the consequences of one's actions becomes so ghastly that one just jolts into awareness. Let me say, somebody is completely intoxicated and they just, nothing is going to happen, they drive. And then, they actually kill someone. Now, after that, it's a big weight on the conscience. I killed someone. The legal consequences come, but more than that, the person has a little bit of morality, moral sense of that, the ethical consequences can really worry me. That completely reorients you. So sometimes, that's it. I will learn through the school of hard knocks itself. And third would be that sometimes the same thing we can say happened to Ajami. Ajami, when the Yamdutas came, and yes, this is what will happen to me now. And then the Vishnudas came and saved. So that changed over there. The third would be that if that person is somehow, and actually third, when I talk about three, they're not necessarily different. It is just that sometimes Krishna may act in some way in their life. And suddenly, oh, what am I doing? I'm not going to do this. I've just lost completely. So, now usually this Krishna acting also happens in conjunction with the first or second. Somebody speaks externally. But sometimes just that moment comes in our life. So, we have to see how we can help that person. So, if we are in the area of the sensitization, then we may tell and they may hear. But if they become desensitized to us, and the more we tell, the more we feel their more they feel their obstruction, their enjoyment. They just become more desensitized to us. So, for example, teenagers, and they want to enjoy. At that time, the parents tell them, "Don't do it." Hey, what do you know? You are from our generation. You don't care.
So this is where desensitized them. So then the fear association that shapes them a lot. And sometimes we just have to let time pass. The consequences come, the maturity comes. We all go through life and we all learn. We may all take different times to learn. The British playwright who said that when I was 15, my father was a fool. Now that I'm 25, I'm amazed how much the old guy has learned in the last 10 years.
It's not your father has learned. His son was a teenager, blinded by the hormones of teenage, has now become a little more sober.
You see that what my father was saying was right. So that now we can see this with respect to Vidura. Vidura, he always tried to give advice to. If we consider in that circle, for Vidura, for Dhritarashtra, he did not listen much to Bhishma. He was somewhat sensitized to Vidura. And then still he would not listen to Vidura. Or rather, he would listen to Vidura but not act on it. But after some time, eventually, what happened? He had to bear the consequences. He lost his sons. And then, when Vidura came back, at that time he was ready. So, when Vidura spoke strongly, he heard and he became enlightened. So it's difficult for somebody who has become desensitized to actually come back on the right track. But if we pray sincerely to Krishna, and Krishna is there in their hearts, Krishna can help them see sense. But it's a very difficult thing. Once a person gets into addiction, it's not only the desire that pulls one through, that pulls one that direction, but also that one's own worldview changes. And one doesn't see other things apart from what will fulfill one's desire and what will justify one's desire. So it's quite difficult to get out of that.
I've got one comment and one question.
Yes, yes.
The comment is that how Lord Krishna, in such a tiny soul, has got all the activities and then super, he sits as super soul and does all the work for every one of us. And still people don't want to acknowledge what Lord Krishna is doing for us. They don't even believe in Lord. They are completely agnostic.
Yes.
In a 1 centimeter piece, or may say, I may say, 1 standpoint is there, which gives us hearing and all the sense of balance. If that sense comes out, we'll be completely useless.
Yeah.
Superficial of dancing, we can't even walk. So, what Lord is doing to us, and this I got from knowledge from Srila Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, gives you so much importance that you can not think of the non-believing.
Yes. The magnificence of nature in arranging our body and in the world. We study that in science, but somehow in science we never make the leap from that to God's intelligence and God's benevolence. That we need devotees to help us with that. Yes, we're all in the tradition of Prabhupada.
Now, my question is, I'm not finished yet. My question is, but that was the comment.
Yeah,
question. Sorry.
No, please go ahead.
The question is that how do we compare, because you already told us that Duryodhana is the personification of all the 6 evils, personification of anger, greed, everything. And how do we compare Duryodhana with Daksha? You can tell us.
Okay. How do we compare Duryodhana with Daksha? Broadly speaking, Duryodhana is seen as a villainous character. He is a person who is just not redeemable. Although many attempts are made to redeem him, he is not redeemable. But with respect to Daksha, he is not considered to be demonic. He is not just a devata, he is not a godly being. But he is also a respectable being. But somehow he has gone off track. So, broadly speaking, the Bhagavatam, in a sense, it blurs the moral lines. Many of the Puranas, they have Devgal on one side, Asuras on the other side. But in the Bhagavatam, there are Devgals who can sometimes behave in a demonic way, Rasulas who can behave in a divine way. So, Duryodhana is, although he is a human body, but he is totally demonic in that. So, if you told me this way, comparison, I would say that you will be able to compare Daksha with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra was attached to his son. He was not a bad person to us. He had some sense of dharma, but his attachment to his son blinded him so much, he just couldn't think of anything else. In the case of Daksha, his attachment to his sense of honor blinded him so much that he couldn't think of anything else. But he was, in a sense, a dharmic person. The Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam basically in this whole pastime, this in the fourth canto will be followed up later in the sixth canto, where Chitralekha pastime comes. Where also Narahuni's pastime comes, where Dhritarashtra pastime comes, and before that Chitraketu. And in that whole sequence, we also have Daksha getting angry, because the Sangha then, there is a conflict between Daksha and Narahuni, and Narahuni is cursed. So what is happening over here is Bhagavatam, its driving theme is the differentiation between Punya and or Karmakanda and Parabhakti. So Daksha is not a bad person, he is a virtuous person. But he is very attached to material religiosity. And it has been called how material religiosity can also lead to entanglement and destruction. In that kind of, there's a story of Maharaj Yugar. Religious, but because of one mistake, he ended up in the body of a serpent, of lower body. The Bhagavatam's driving theme is one has to go beyond Punya to Bhagavatam. And that's what we can compare. Thank you. So, last one.
Well, you talk briefly about when children are fighting, it's the responsibility of the seniors to mitigate the quarrels. So I'm surprised, and also you talked about how Duryodhana was advised so many times, but he did not correct himself. So my question is, how is it that Lord Shiva and Daksha are so much envy towards each other, so to speak? There is a tension between them. But there is no description of Lord Brahma or anybody else trying to mitigate their differences.
Oh, okay, good question. So, and there was a tension between Shiva and Daksha. Why did nobody mediate and try to mitigate the situation? Yeah, broadly speaking, they were just living in their own social circles. So, the conflict did not come so much, although there was tension. But the conflict was not active because they were not interacting so much. And sometimes, Srila Prabhupada told us, the love of you will be shown by how you walk. Sometimes two people can be such that they just can't work with it. And then the only way they can cooperate is by operating separately. It's not necessarily a bad thing. That's the way they are trying to work together, causes so much conflict. And Prabhupada adopted that himself. The two devotees would have conflict. Say, you go and start a temple there, you go and start a temple there. And they both operated separately and they did well. So, sometimes when there are conflicts, it may just be that it's not, some people can get along with some people can't. And that's just the way people are. So then, it's not that the two people are bad, but in different relationships function well at different levels of distance. So, some relationships could be very close to each other and they can do very well. Some people can do very well, but from a distance. Now, appreciate what you are doing and the other person also appreciate what you are doing. Let's not work together. So, it's when too much closeness is put into a relationship, where distance is needed, or too much distance is put in a relationship and closeness is needed, then it causes a problem. So, in this case, they were just functioning in their own domains. And all the tension was there. It was not an active confrontation happening anywhere. But the way events transpired, it was very fast.
Sati came. Shiva told her, you may not have any interactions, you may not got any invitation, no need to go there. But she went there. And then the way things spiraled off, she gave up her body, then there was cursing, counter cursing, and then by that time, Shiva also got justified the anger. So things just catapulted out of control too fast. So it was just at one point, there was no need for mediation because both of them are just doing their own thing. There's one interaction and there's an explosion because of that. So there is no time for mediation and mitigation. Okay. Thank you very much. Ranta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Krishna Prabhupada Ki Jai.